ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, first 10th canto, chapter 9, Mother Yashoda binds Lord Krishna, text 1 and 2. Sri Shuku Vacha, Ekada Grihada Sishu, Yashoda Nanda Gehini, Kamantara Nayuktasu, Nirmamanta Swayam Dadi Ekada Grihada Sishu Yashoda Nanda Gehini Karmantara Nayuktasu Nirmamanta Swayam Dadi Ekada Grihada Sishu Yashoda Nanda Gehini Karmantara Nayuktasu Nirmamanta Swayam Dadi Sri Shukuvacha Sri Shukadeva Goswami said Ekada one day Grihadasishu when all the maidservants of the household were otherwise engaged. Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, Nandagehini, the Queen of Nandamaraj, Kama Antara, in other household affairs, Niyuktasu, being engaged, Nirmamanta, churned, Swayam, personally, Dadi, the yogurt, Yani, all such, Yani, such, Iha, in this connection, Gitani, songs, Tatbala Charitani, in which the activities of her own child were enacted, Cha, and Dadi Nirmantane, while churning the yogurt. Kale, at that time. Smaranti, remembering. Tani, all of them, in the form of songs. Agayata, chanted. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued. One day, when Mother Yashoda saw that all the maidservants were engaged in other household affairs, she personally began to churn the yogurt. While churning, she remembered the childish activities of Krishna, and in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, quoting from the Vaishnava Toshini of Srila Sanatana Goswami, says that the incident of Krishna's breaking the pot of yogurt and being bound by Mother Yashoda took place on the Deepavali day, or Deepamalika. Even today in India, this festival is generally celebrated very gorgeously in the month of Kartika by fireworks and lights, especially in Bombay. It is to be understood that among all the cows of Nanda Maharaj, several of Mother Yashoda's cows ate only grasses so flavorful that the grasses would automatically flavor the milk. Mother Yashoda wanted to collect the milk from these cows, make it into yogurt, and churn it into butter personally. Since she thought that this child Krishna was going to the houses of neighborhood gopas and gopis to steal butter because he did not like the milk and yogurt ordinarily prepared. While churning the butter, Mother Yashoda was singing about the childhood activities of Krishna. It is formally a custom that if one wanted to remember something constantly, he would transform it into poetry or have this done by a professional poet. It appears that Mother Yashoda did not want to forget Krishna's activities at any time. Therefore, she poeticized all of Krishna's childhood activities, such as the killing of Putana, Agasura, Shakatasura, and Trinavarta. And while churning the butter, she sang about these activities in poetical form. This should be the practice of persons eager to remain in Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. This incident shows how Krishna conscious Mother Yashoda was. To stay in Krishna consciousness, we should follow such persons. Om Agena Timadandasya Ganjana Shalakaya Chakshumalitamina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Jananda Shri Advaita Garaha Shivasavi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This Damodar Leela is a pastime that shows determination in love and extraordinary affection in love. Affection so great that Krishna will subordinate his opulences to the affection of his devotee. Mother Yashoda is so determined to please Krishna. She's making all kinds of plans, all kinds of strategies to satisfy her son. That is the way it should be in devotional life. We should always be thinking how to increase our service, how Krishna can be better served. As soon as you start thinking how you can be served, how your interests can be met, then you become miserable, because thinking like that is the precise mentality of the material world. But as soon as you start thinking, how can Krishna be pleased? Then the spiritual world opens up to you. Mother Yashoda had a concern that Krishna, he's going to so many houses stealing milk products. So she thought, maybe he's not satisfied with the milk products that are available in his own home. Therefore, he has to go to other places, other houses. So she made a plan. She was thinking of the needs of her child, who actually is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acting as a child in order to reciprocate the love of a devotee who wants to love him intensely as a child. So Mother Yashoda began to consider, I have access to some special cows. My husband Nanda Maharaj, in his huge herd of cows, he has some that eat only special grasses. And these cows produce a very specially flavored milk. I will gather milk from these special cows, and then I will offer this milk products made from the specially flavored milk to my baby Krishna. In this way, surely, upon tasting the superior milk products at my home, he won't feel the need to go to others' houses. Of course, we know Krishna, as Bal Gopal, he's demonstrating the perfection of being a mischievous child. He doesn't go to others' houses because he thinks something's wrong with Mother Yashoda's milk products or that they're lacking. He's just engaging in the bliss of mischief-making, as any good child would like to do. I remember when I was a little boy, I must have been about 5 years old. My brother must have been about 3 and a half. So, you know, for Christmas, many people put Christmas bulbs all around the doors in their house, you know. Christmas lights on the outside of the houses. They do that here too. So my brother and I was 5, he was 3 and a half. We went to quite a few houses in the neighborhood, unscrewed the bulbs and broke them on the, you know, on the steps of the people's houses. So I remember my mother found out. She grabbed us both by the hands and took us to all the neighbors to apologize. Of course, I'm sure she probably had to buy them new light bulbs also. So we thought this was great. You just go to people's houses, unscrew the bulbs, break them. You know, what could be better fun? So That mischief-making tendency is there in children because we're part of Krishna. Krishna has this mischief-making tendency very greatly. Because he's the supreme great. So, Mother Yashoda, she's gathered this special milk. And she's churning it. And while she's churning, she's reciting the glories of her child Krishna in poeticized form. She's making up her own poems, and also the elderly gopis in the village, they also have their songs. And so Mother Yashoda is reminding herself of her son's activities, which are the only attraction in the simple village of Vrindavan. There's no other attraction other than Krishna. What does he do? How does he do it? What are his qualities? Who is he with? This is the only thing that goes on in Vrindavan. Actually, at this time that Mother Yashoda was churning, Krishna was asleep in another room. And Mother Yashoda missed him so much, she's feeling separation. Even though the child is right there in the same house, he's just in another room. Still, Mother Yashoda's love is so great that in order to soothe her feelings of separation, she would sing these songs about Krishna. In this way, she's demonstrating how any devotee can always be Krishna conscious. By always thinking about Krishna, singing about Krishna. In some way, keeping your mind absorbed in Krishna conscious activities. That is the purpose of our schedule here. How to always think of Krishna. From rising early until throughout the busy day to taking rest at night, we just want to think of Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's service. And then we become Krishna conscious. We've already experienced the so-called pleasure of thinking about ourselves and our bodily and mental demands. That's very boring, very frustrating if you've ever tried it for some time, to simply think about your own bodily demands and mental demands. It may seem very attractive to you at first, but gradually you should be able to see that, oh, this is just so deflating and depressing. It's me and mine, me and mine, me and mine. To be a bhakta means the opposite. That means to think of, throughout the day, of Krishna's interests. Then you're on the spiritual platform. People, of course, from the material point of view, have a very hard time understanding this. How the life of a devotee happens. Because they do not perceive this consciousness of thinking about Krishna. They can't see that. They don't understand anything about Krishna. At best, they think this is mythology. Meanwhile, the devotees are making real progress. They're becoming free from material desires, and they're pushing forward in their increasing development of attachment for Krishna just based on thinking of Krishna, Krishna's service. So there'll always be a disagreement between the suras and the asuras, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Dvabhutasarga lokesmin daiva asura evaja. There are two types of creatures in this world. Divine and demoniac. It's been that way since the beginning of creation. Those who are demoniac cannot understand the spiritual platform. They cannot understand why would anyone want to give up material desires. But speak of understanding the process for giving up material desires. Those who are devotees are attached to thinking about Krishna and Krishna's pleasure. A true devotee cannot understand why would anyone want to absorb his or her mind simply a material activity. Who would want to do that? So, Mother Yashoda is demonstrating how to be always Krishna conscious. Just like here, we have our activities of practical service, trying to reach out to help others be Krishna conscious, make them fortunate, like we have the chance to be fortunate. We don't ask anything in return for ourselves. Actually, we're so satisfied to have a chance to engage in this service of introducing Krishna consciousness to others. Throughout the day, we're thinking how to make this service better and better. How can we be more compassionate? What are the ways and means we're introducing more people to Krishna's service? And then we're always hearing and chanting the glories of Lord Krishna. We never get enough of that. We never tire of that. Therefore, devotees are always happy to gather together to discuss Krishna, to sing about Krishna. In this way, life goes on. We honor the food that has been offered to Krishna and becomes prasad. That is the life of a devotee. In this way, all our desires become fulfilled. But when the material energy presses us, we may lose sight of this basic reality, that I can simply be satisfied in Krishna consciousness very easily. And then we start contemplating our selfish desires, and I wonder what everyone else is doing. And in this way, your Krishna consciousness dries up, just like a lake dries up when there are lots of big reeds in the lake. The reeds suck out all the water. Similarly, when we start having material desires, they start to suck out the water of our Krishna consciousness, and so the lake of our bhakti becomes very dry. We're not ashamed to always think of Krishna. We're very happy to have the opportunity to render service to please Krishna. Now, Mother Yashoda is so determined to please her son that she herself is going to churn the yogurt into butter. She had plenty of maidservants, but she's thinking, I personally have to take this task in hand to satisfy Krishna. He's going to others' houses. I can't even entrust my maidservants with this household task. I'll do it myself. Therefore, I can be sure that the maximum effect will be there. So that's what she's doing. And her service is done with affection. While she's churning, she's laboring, she's absorbed in thinking of Krishna with great love. This is how to do devotional service to Krishna. We shouldn't do it in a haphazard way. We shouldn't do it in a mechanical way. While doing service for Krishna, we should always think, I'm not worthy to have an opportunity to do this service, but somehow Krishna has given me this opportunity, rare opportunity. Let me take full advantage of it and beg Krishna for the intelligence and purity to do this service. That is the proper mentality in performing bhakti. We don't deserve a chance to serve Krishna, yet we've been given this rare opportunity. So let us beg Krishna for the ability to do the service with increasing purity, increasing attention to detail, willing to undergo a few inconveniences sometimes. It's not like in the material world, no one ever undergoes inconveniences to get what they want. The very nature of the material world is inconvenience. But it seems that as soon as there's inconveniences to undergoing Krishna's service, then our mind rebels. But in terms of inconveniences in the material world, when you want to get something, well, you tolerate to a point because it's for you. But for Krishna, when you're serving Krishna and there's an inconvenience, how can this be? I don't know if I can go on like this. For an ordinary person, it's hard to understand how you can be satisfied living so simply. It's hard to understand. Maybe even sometimes you yourselves wonder about it. How can we be satisfied? Just living like this. I am satisfied, but how can that be? And you create agitations for your own mind because you can't even believe the state of satisfaction that you just living a life centered around Krishna. And then you start to have doubts. Well, I know I'm satisfied, but how can that be? I don't have much. I'm living so simply. What's going on here? But don't throw your good fortune away just because you may not understand how it is you become so easily satisfied in Krishna's service. Please think of Mother Yashoda's determination. Please think of how she's thinking of what is best for Krishna. What does Krishna want? What does he need? How can I increase my love and service for him? That is bhakti. You're singing the Dhammadrastic prayers every morning this month. Namam Isvaram Satchidananda Rupam Lasa Kundalam Gokule Prachamanam Yashoda Biolukala Davamanam Paramishtam Achinta Todrachigopya. As we explain every year, the first thing you do is offer your obeisances to Krishna as the Ishwar, Namam Ishvaram. Because unless you understand Krishna as the Supreme Controller, you won't understand Krishna as Bal Gopal, Mother Yashoda's darling son, Yashodananda. But first you have to understand how Krishna's controlling everything. Then you can proceed to a more intimate understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By doing this Kartika performance, the ultimate goal is to please Srimati Radharani, who is known as Urjeshwari, the queen of the Urjavrata, or the Kartik vow. So every morning or evening, you offer the lamps. That's part of the Kartik Vrata. The main thing about Kartik is to increase your hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's more important than any increased physical austerities. Are there any questions? Don't feel shy about reading the Damodar Lila in the Krishna book over and over again. It's just a short chapter. If you want to get into it deeper, you can look in the 9th chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Yes.
So is it okay for us to write columns about Krishna's pastimes or to make up goals?
Just as long as you understand that they don't have the same punch as the poems and songs by the great acharyas. Why you've done so? Your instruction? What is your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The point of the verse is that anyone who actually understands, they would be willing. And out of all those, in other words, out of a group of intelligent persons, not considering the unintelligent, but out of a group of intelligent persons, how would you find someone who's not willing to serve Radha Kund? Out of a group of intelligent persons. In other words, that's the standard of intelligence. That's the standard of real intelligence. Nectar of Instruction starts off very basically describing controlling the senses, the need for that. But it ends up with the most confidential knowledge about Radha Kund and Srimati Radharani. So Nectar of Instruction is meant for beginners in spiritual life, but still the last few verses present very confidential knowledge. Radha Kund is very most intimate, and as stated in Nectar Instruction, even Narada Muni can't go there. Service to Radha Kund is done in the spiritual body. Sometimes devotees misread these verses and thought, well, since there's nothing higher than serving Radha Kund, I should just go there now. But they forgot the rest of the verses and purports, which explain that Radha Kund is so exalted, even Narada Muni can't go there. And that the service of Radha Kund is done in your Siddha Deha, your perfect spiritual body. So that way you can see that Nectar of Instruction covers everything from the beginning all the way to the end. You should always be thinking about Krishna's interests. But sometimes you might be lying awake at night, trying to sleep because you just got so much to think about. You got so much to think about. So many important things, huh? Earth-shaking things. Huh? Because what? I don't understand. You can't relate to devotees because of what?
You can, your mind's full of thoughts, but you have to do that day. And someone's trying to talk to you, asking a question, and you find this today. It's hard to communicate with people because you're trying to think about your service. So
part of our service is to relate to devotees. It's not possible to serve Krishna without the society of devotees. There's a time for everything. Just like tomorrow we'll discuss how Mother Yashoda put Krishna down from nursing him to tend to milk on the stove. That was also for Krishna. So there's a time to do everything in Krishna consciousness. There's a time to plan out your day. And there's a time for having loving exchanges with devotees. Your day is so complicated, it takes a few hours of thought to plan it out. I don't think that life around here is so complicated. We should thank Krishna for the expertise to swim in the ocean of devotee association. That's a spiritual ability. How to relish the association of devotees. We should be very eager to develop that skill, and we should beg Krishna for that skill. We don't want to consider devotees to be an imposition. Who are these guys taking up all my time? I could get a lot of service done if they weren't around. No, you won't get very much service done at all without the association of devotees. In their association, you become stimulated.
I've got a question. From the journey of self-discovery, in the chapter Reincarnation Explained, it says that nowadays mothers are killing the children within the womb, so that would be relating to abortion. And I just remember that I was told once in one of the meetings here that consciousness in the child, in the embryo, well, it would be a child, doesn't come until the 7th month of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if the abortions usually are done 4 to 6 weeks into pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So how could that be explained?
How could what be explained?
Well, how could it be explained that if the child, if the baby does not have consciousness?
No, it doesn't say it doesn't have consciousness. Consciousness is not manifest. It's not. It's like when you have you ever been unconscious?
Yes.
Okay. Would you still, even though you're unconscious, would you like someone to kill you? Because you're unconscious. What does it matter? Don't worry. You won't feel it.
Oh, I see. Okay, I get it. Yeah. So it just hasn't woken.
Right.
We are awoken into its new life.
Huh?
It hasn't reawoken. The baby hasn't awoken into its new life, to its Krishna, to its consciousness, until the 7th month.
Yeah, then the consciousness is fully developed.
Right.
Why should you take advantage of someone just when they're sleeping? You've ever slept so deeply it was like you were unconscious? So, how would you like someone to come along and try to kill you then? Because, yeah, she's almost completely unconscious. Of course you wouldn't like that.
So that means at all stages of pregnancy, the child has consciousness. At all stages.
At all stages, the spirit soul has consciousness.
Right.
In any body.
Right.
But according to the body, that consciousness manifests to different degrees. So the body of a child in the womb, less than 7 months, doesn't permit such a display of consciousness as the body of the child in the womb when it becomes 7 months allows. And your body allows more consciousness than a little kid's body. So the soul is always conscious, but different bodies permit different displays of consciousness. The candle's always lit, but you can put different kinds of jars over the candle, which will obscure the light to varying degrees.
Thank you.
Yes. There's nothing wrong with supporting your Krishna conscious lifestyle so that you can think about Krishna and serve Krishna. There's nothing wrong with supporting a lifestyle that's focused on Krishna's pleasure.
Sometimes those activities seem very, very surprising. Yeah.
It's a false understanding of bhakti. If your life is lived for Krishna's pleasure, then you have to take care of yourself in a way that doesn't interfere with your spiritual life. Now, it's true that activities of bodily maintenance, even for a Krishna conscious person, cannot compare to activities of direct glorification of the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, those activities aren't material. Hearing and chanting about Krishna is the basis, the foundation of all the processes of devotional service. So, if your hearing and chanting about Krishna is proper, it'll be easy for you to see all your other activities in relation to Krishna. But if you're weak on your hearing and chanting about Krishna, then you'll become overwhelmed by the material world. You won't see things in relation to Krishna. That is the advantage of attentive chanting of the holy name of Krishna. The holy name inspires you, gives you the vision, empowers you with the vision to see that everything is the extension of the Lord's energy. Parasya Shakti Abhividaiva Shriyate. The more that you think about how to please Krishna, the more auspicious your life becomes. You have to understand that you're being trained to think a different way. Why cling to your old thinking habits which cause you so much frustration and misery? Me and mine, how to please me. What's in it for me? Bhakti yoga means to be trained how to think what's in it for Krishna. And because you're a part of Krishna, you'll automatically be included without worry. Is it possible that your mind and senses can be happy by your trying to please them? Is it possible? Just think about it. My mind, my senses. Is it possible that I can stimulate them with pleasure? Actually, if you're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see it is not possible. There's just the hope that it's possible. So material life is based on false hope. You march on with great determination. Mother Yashoda also has great determination. How to serve Krishna better. How to love Krishna better. That is her determination. No, don't do that. Need some fresh air here. Anything else? During this month, make a special effort to think about this pastime of Yashoda trying to bind Lord Krishna the rope. Don't be afraid to think about Krishna's pastimes. Then year after year, your concentration on Krishna will increase. Always hanker to taste the nectar of hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna. And put yourself forward for rendering intelligent, well-considered service to Krishna. Not haphazard service or mindless service, mechanical service. Think deeply how you can make your life a better offering for Krishna's pleasure. And then you'll begin to experience the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you want more than religious theory, engage your senses in bhakti yoga and you'll get the realization, the experience of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And when your service becomes so laden with affection, with priti, then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he'll personally talk to you and give you personalized instructions how to go back to Godhead. Yes? That's part of being intelligent. Yes, that's all part of being intelligent. Someone who doesn't do that is not intelligent. You have to learn by asking. It's like how to learn how to ride a bicycle. Gradually you develop the natural skill, but you have to start somewhere. To be trained. The experienced devotee knows what are things that should be directly asked about and what are just details. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, you'll read how Bharat Maharaj got into trouble with the deer because he did not consult his spiritual master about his inordinate attachment for the deer. He threw away all his spiritual practices for the sake of this deer. He didn't ask. He just started concocting. What is the use of having vows of renunciation when there's a little deer suffering? True spiritual life means to just stop the suffering of such a deer. To hell with my spiritual practices, in other words. Here's the real spirituality, helping this little deer. He had it all figured out, he thought. And he didn't consult. Material attachments are a very strong thing. So much that Bharat Maharaj, he left his emperorship of the whole known world at that time. He left his family. But then he just redeveloped his material attachment just for a deer. Little deer. Shows you the power of Maya. And he didn't ask any guidance about it. This all felt natural to him and he rationalized it all. If I'm really compassionate, I'll just pay attention completely to this deer. Even though the deer is interrupting my spiritual practices, I have to be a sensitive person.
He was just confused, obviously, wasn't he? That devotee was confused by putting his attachment, so much attachment to the deer. So when he died, if he had quoted Krishna conscious, if he had been thinking of Krishna when he died, why did he come back as a deer?
Because he wasn't thinking of Krishna when he died.
I didn't know that.
Mm. Yeah, you have to read the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. How far are you in the Bhagavatam?
One.
Okay, that's a beginning. Yeah. It's always good to start at one. Don't take for granted your opportunity for hearing about Krishna, serving Krishna. Don't become confused by thinking there's not much difference between Krishna conscious activities and material activities. then like a foolish child who's had a diamond put in his hand, the child will just throw the diamond away or pop it in his mouth, think it's a piece of candy or something. So much of our Krishna conscious effort is meant to keep reminding us of the great fortune we have. Once you understand the great fortune you have, then you can truly start to move forward in developing your affection for Krishna. But first, understand your great fortune, your rare fortune. Yes. Constant prayer to Krishna, please don't let me take this for granted. An inattentive chanting is the first main, that's the main way things start to become familiar. Just mutter your japa. Yeah, you gotta do it. So, otherwise everyone thinks you're in Maya, so just get it out of the way. And then you start to take for granted the association of devotees. I've seen them every day. I know all their faults. I know all their trips. They never think the way I think. When will they wake up and understand my glories? I've been waiting. I just haven't clicked on it yet. No, we should always pray to Krishna that we can swim happily in the ocean of devotee association. It's an art that Krishna bestows upon you, an ability, divine ability, but you have to ask for it. But you become so full of yourself, I know what I'm doing, I know what I want. You'll never be able to have the attitude necessary for begging Krishna for the spiritual ability to associate with devotees. Yes, certainly. There are inconveniences in living with other people. They're all different from you. If we look in this room, we see all the types of persons who are here. Ordinarily, you would not associate with each other. Just look at all the different types of persons. Ordinarily, you wouldn't associate with each other. You'd have your little niche of friends who were pretty much like you and thought the way you thought. That's why they're your friends. If you look in this room, you see all kinds of different persons, different styles of activity. They've all come together for the purpose of serving Krishna. This shows you how there can be real unity on the spiritual platform. We're all united in trying to serve Krishna, and particularly we're trying to carry out the mission of Krishna's dear devotee. But it is a fact, you all would have not hung out with each other like this for a material reason. So sometimes that material point becomes more prominent in our dealings. Who are you? And why I gotta listen to you? And why I gotta be around you? And other times the spiritual reality is more prominent and we see everyone in relation to Krishna. So it's no doubt sometimes you have to tolerate But don't you have to tolerate in the material world? And have you ever worked a job? At your job, are all the people at the place of your work, they're all handpicked by you, they're all to your liking? Anyone worked a job like that? Of course, if you've never worked, then you don't have any practical experience of how things go on in the world. Sometimes devotees who've never worked before and they come to Krishna consciousness, they have a real pampered idea about what they should tolerate and what they shouldn't tolerate, because they've never experienced the austerities of working. So any little inconvenience that happens in the association of devotees, it takes to be such a big thing, as if there's no inconvenience and austerity in working or doing things in the material world. And anyone here, you who's had a job where you could pick everybody you worked with? No way. Who has worked here before? So, what about university? You're going to university. Could you pick your professors? If you want to take a particular course, you take what professors are teaching the course. You don't like the professor, then just don't. You have to choose a different course. I used to choose university courses like that, not so much because of the subject matter, but because of the professor. If the professor wanted too much work, I would just change the course. Regardless of whatever the subject was. My friends and I would get together. This guy is a bit too much. Forget his course. We're not going to be spending our days and weekends, nights studying all the time. Guy wants too much. What does he think he is? All right, we had a little bit of interest in Egyptian history, but not enough to study it so much. Forget this. So that's the way life is in the material world. When you start to work, you'll find that out. Sometimes our devotees who are, strictly of the dole sampradaya. they have no understanding, what it's like to, have a full day's work, in which from morning to night you're doing something according to someone else's vision at someone else's place. It's all, you've got to undergo so many inconveniences just for someone else in order to get that paycheck. Yes? Oh, of course. I will do that. Yeah, I understand. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't. All day long, you just got to say what you got to say in order to get the paycheck. You have to be phony. You have to play the game like everyone else does. Smile in people's faces when you can't stand them. And and if you're a lady, probably the boss is, trying to see if, any possibilities. You got to think how to, how not to refuse them too strongly so that you lose your job. But at the same time, even though there's strict work practice laws about that, right? Still, these things go on somehow or other. Why just ladies who work for a male boss? What about men who work for a female boss? It's all equal these days. All these things you have to put up with. So why can't you handle a little bit of austerity and inconvenience in devotee association? If Krishna is strongly in the center, you'll tolerate inconveniences. Just like these ladies, normally ladies, you can't put more than two ladies in one room without a world war going on. But because they have a strong Krishna purpose in the center, they tolerate the inconveniences. And they benefit by getting a chance to develop their Krishna consciousness. What about when you get your own home? Then there'll be no more inconveniences, right? Who here has lived in their own home or own flat with someone else there? your own family, your own partner. Who's done that? Right. So, there was never anything to tolerate, right? Everything the other person did was just, you know, just like nectar. No. You had to always calculate how much of this can I put up with, right? Am I getting more than I'm giving? Dealing with other people means tolerance. But we forget all that. Even in marriage relationships, even Krishna conscious marriage relationships, once the honeymoon phase is over, very quickly each devotee understands that, you know, it's going to involve a lot of tolerance. The lady has her female dreams, the male has his drives, and so these two things meet together and produce a situation that requires tolerance. And then hopefully after a while you realize that the most meaningful thing you can do is to try to serve Krishna together. Then there'll be some peace and fulfillment. Otherwise, there's always things to tolerate. There's always inconveniences. It's like I always tell householder men, if they're having some spat or in the temple, management spat amongst themselves. I said, well, how can you expect that everyone's going to agree with everything that you do? You can't even get your own wife to agree with everything you say or do. Why do you expect everybody else to agree? Well, it's true. Can't even get your own wife to do whatever you want. So why it makes you think everybody else is going to do whatever you want? There's always something to tolerate, some inconvenience. It's always going to be that there's always going to be one person around who, if you could just get rid of, the world would be a better place, right? Right? You notice there's always one person like that around? If you just got rid of that person, life would be great. That's always going to be there because of the material world. Even amongst a society of devotees, there's always going to be one devotee. I know he's a devotee. I know she's a devotee. But I just wish that person was somewhere else. Right? It's always like that. So you might as well just realize that, you know, it's always going to be that way. And certainly, you'll be in that situation of someone wishing you weren't around. There's always going to be someone who wishes you weren't around. Sri Yashoda wasn't here. This place wouldn't be so spaced out. Why doesn't she practice her yoga like she's supposed to every day? You always find something about somebody. Then the other person will think, no, Sri Yashoda's great. She makes this place wonderful. But you, if you weren't around. It goes on and on like that. So you might as well get used to it. There's always going to be someone around you who you wish would just politely disappear. Not die, you would never think of it, but just get out of here. Get out. And they're always getting in the way of your plans, right? When you get a great idea, that person's always there to, You know, rain on your parade. It's always going to be like that. This is the world of duality. Impediment. So you have to learn to deal with all that in Krishna consciousness. It's easy to deal with if you have a strong appetite for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then you realize I need the devotees in order to stir the nectar of hearing and talking about Krishna. It's like on Tuesdays and what, Saturday nights, you have your bhajan nights. So this is to prove to you that you can sit down and just sing about Krishna and be satisfied. You have to prove it to yourself. Otherwise, it'll all be theory. Once you just chant Hare Krishna for hours, then you start to realize, oh, there is something to this. But you have to try it. How to just go on and on and on and on and on. I wanted you to have that experience. Therefore, I said a couple of times a week, at least, you should come together and just sing about Krishna. Don't stop. Just to prove to yourself that, yes, the glories of the Lord are inexhaustible. Otherwise, you just read that, but you may never have that experience. Of course, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books over and over again, you'll get that inexhaustible feeling. That understanding that these books are inexhaustible.
You know, we're deciding, we went on this wonderful retreat, a group of us, up to Lake Taupo, and that, what you're describing now, is the feeling that I got in the evenings. We were chanting, and we were doing Krishna plays, and it was for me, personally, it was really bonding with the devotees. I loved it.
So who did you bond with?
Well, I think all of them. I came back. It was just great, the continual chanting. And
yeah. So, did you continue with the continual chanting? Okay, I guess then you're acting according to your understanding then. That's very good. So now you're beyond the hit and miss chanting stage? All right, tell me about it later. We have to walk our talk, you know. So, being with devotees, living with devotees, can sometimes offer its challenges. But the benefits far outweigh the disadvantages. And the fact is, even you have to go through much more disadvantages through material association. Sometimes you forget that. Sometimes devotees get real pampered and spoiled, and they forget what the material world is like. You go to work, and you spend more time with the people at work than you get to spend with your own family. You come home to your own family, and you argue with your own family. Your husband or wife, your partner, as they say today, doesn't quite seem to understand you fully. Yes? Anyone experience all that? There's always some shortcoming, some lack that we have to tolerate. That's the nature of material life. So why can't you tolerate a little bit for Krishna? Especially since the benefits of devotee association far outweigh the inconveniences. Of course, as long as you understand that, you'll stay in the association of devotees. Just like these ladies, so many of them living together. It's a little inconvenient, but they obviously agree. The benefits far outweigh the inconveniences. Is that so? Is that so, Tara? Of course, we don't expect them that they expect that they're going to live like this all their life. But what's wrong with some years of developing your spiritual faculties? And men who are serious about being brahmacharis, they have to learn this, how to cruise in the association of devotees, how not to get thrown off kilter by taking something too seriously. And, why did you do that to me? And those men who are going to become householders, you should understand, you'll have to practice toleration even in your own home with your Vedic queen. So many times, you know, there's a marriage and the man automatically thinks his wife is going to be Draupadi and the wife thinks her husband is going to be, you know, Arjuna or Yudhisthira. Now all my problems will be solved. And you find out you just got a new set of problems. Krishna conscious compatibility is resolved by keeping Krishna's service in the center. Whether it's in your own home, between husband and wife, or it's in the ashram, all incompatibilities are resolved by keeping Krishna's service in the center. This world is not a place to satisfy you materially. Remember that illusory feeling? Now I have everything I need. Now, this is what I want. Now my life is going to be fine. I've got it. And then it doesn't turn out to be that way. So why can't we tolerate the inconveniences in the association of devotees? Best to always avoid confrontations with devotees. Because so many times you'll see that time solves a lot of the problems that devotees have in their interaction. Just time. If you just take everything head on, what do you say this to me? You took my tilak. I know, I was in a rush, I was trying to get the program on time. You took my tilak. Often if you just, you know, be cool and just not directly make a confrontation, things get worked out. Or you'll find a better opportunity to say something when you're not so enraged that someone dare use your tilak or something. Is that what you do? Where did you hear this? Here? Oh, you said yes. Are you doing too much service? So what's the problem? You need more service, huh? Are you working as hard for Krishna as you worked in your material life? Oh, that's not good then. You sacrificed so much working in the material world. Now you're going to come to New Zealand and be lazy, huh? You have to work as much, at least as much as you worked for material purposes. You got to do that for Krishna. So learn how to do all some different kinds of services here. In order to do that, you have to say yes. You have anything better to do besides serving Krishna? So, take advantage of your situation. You see anyone else who's doing too much service here? You know anyone who's doing too much devotional service? Martin, you're doing too much devotional service. Adhanta, too much. Tari, doing too much. So, and what's wrong with pushing it a bit for Krishna's pleasure? Most of you are young with so much youthful energy. So what's wrong with sacrificing a little bit of it? Right, Kopihita? So I haven't, other than devotees who don't have all their health, I don't see anyone who's doing too much service. It's like Krishna Loka was telling me yesterday that if she would not do anything for a month and just stay in her room, the next month she'd be more healthy. But she can't stay in her room and not do anything for a month. Certainly I know. If I stop traveling, then my health would be better. The point is that within the context of your devotional service, you have to do all you can to maintain your health. If you give up your service, your spiritual health will be finished. Although sometimes Krishna does make it quite plain, okay, that's enough for now. You just take care of your health. But most of you, almost all of you, are so youthful and full of energy. You should be thinking how to do more. And by the time you reach, at least by the time you reach your early 30s, you'll realize you have to take care of your body and do some exercise. When you're in your 20s, probably you don't think like that. But even nowadays, because of the craziness of teenage years, I notice that young people are getting quite exhausted even in their 20s. You notice that? Yeah. Because of all the madness they did as teenagers, their bodies are a wreck by the time they're in their 20s. So sometimes I've seen that even devotees in their 20s need to start exercising. If you're smart, at least by the time you're in your early 30s, you'll start to exercise rather than wait till the collapse comes in your 40s. That's one good thing our yoga teachers have noticed. By teaching yoga, they have to do yoga, most of them. And then their health is better. Right? That's a benefit they all get. They get good health. You've noticed that, Sri Yuga?
Certainly.
It's nice having a task that makes you healthy at the same time you're doing it. All right. Anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Worshipful call.